Commissioner Nkosi from the Public Service Commission. Good morning to all of you, honourable members. I think we have to proceed with our committee meeting today. As you can see that we've got one major item. It can be divided into one and two, but it remains one matter. Let me just outline what we have for the agenda for today and outline the apologies so that we can proceed with the meeting. In terms of the agenda, it states that we will have the briefing by the Minister of Public Service and Administration on the establishment of a single anti-corruption agency responsible for tackling corruption. The second item is the briefing by Minister again on Public Service and Administration on how is the collaboration of the single anti-corruption agency with the Special Investigation Unit and HOGS going to work. It's just to get the two. As honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, you'd notice that the two items are interlinked. That will depend in terms of how the department would like to handle it, because I don't see it as can be separated. But if the preparation is such that they'll focus on the first one and come back on the second one, that will be fine. I would like to state on the apologies, we have the first apology from Honourable Williams, and the second apology is Honourable Nyakembe. Both of them are also participating in the Labour Portfolio Committee, and today there's a voting process. We normally squabble where do they go, but if there are votes, it becomes clear that they might be in one portfolio committee and they won't be with us. There are two members who said they're just outside entering, Honourable Didoit and Honourable Marais. I just hope they're nearby. They will be joining the meeting as well. But present with us, we do have Honourable Nyakembe, Honourable Bashiru, Honourable Mohali. And therefore, I think we would just take some time just to have a few members coming in so that you can be able to start with the meeting. In the meantime, possibly just to sort out our issues, we will proceed in the manner that we allow the department to either do two presentations or relate both. They will explain to us how they're going to proceed. Just a brief background on this matter, that it has long been on the agenda item of the committee, and it's one of the priority issues for the committee, and especially in the light of the complaints that the society normally have on corruption and so on. It's therefore a major issue. I need to clarify that when the Minister Sisulu came into the department, she did clearly indicate that it's a priority matter for her, and she did indicate to the committee that she would need sufficient time to focus on the matter and get back to Parliament to give feedback in terms of how she is going to proceed. We are at a point today where we would be getting a briefing in terms of what are the plans and how is the entire anti-corruption going to be handled. But what is impressing the committee is that it's a priority matter, and we all are concerned about areas of corruption within the public service. And our belief is that, because she's a doer, she will really shake this part, and we're looking forward to that. We are then, in the light of the two honourable members coming in, we're then going to be able to proceed with our meeting. There's Honourable Msimang, who's also there at the back, member of the committee, and the two members, Honourable Marend and Honourable Detroit, as I indicated, they'll be coming in, are already here. It therefore means that we can proceed properly with our meeting. I must also emphasize that I always appreciate if the minister is here on a Wednesday. Today she's also joined by the deputy minister, Ayanda Roro, and both of them are part of this meeting on a Wednesday. For us, it's a plus, because we know Wednesdays are quite complicated on areas of cabinet, and therefore their presence is very much acknowledged. And sincerely, Minister, thanks for ensuring that you also prioritize Parliament, and thanks to you, Deputy Minister, as well. At this point, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, I will allow the department to proceed. I'll hand over to the Minister, Lindiwe Sisulu, to start, and I'm sure they'll also indicate along the way who is present. Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you for your warm words of welcome. I have a veritable army with me, but I must immediately indicate that part of the army is not mine. It is a public service which I believe have come for their own matter. But we don't mind believing they're here to support us. Otherwise, I have my deputy minister and my acting DG and DDGs, acting DG Tulum and DG Dr. Mahapa, who will be assisting me with this presentation. We have also the combined staff of our entity and supported by Advocate Simelane, my legal advisor. Chairperson, one of the matters that confronted me when I became Minister of Public Service almost immediately after we had resolved the matter, the urgent critical matter of the negotiations with Labour, was the issue of corruption or levels of corruption in the public service. At that time, we just received a report from the Public Service Commission, and they were very concerned about the incidence of what they had gathered over the years, and especially in the last report, as the incidence of possible conflict of interest between members of the public service, SMS members, and either members of their family and their businesses in government, and a whole lot of issues that they came to brief me about very much at the outset of my meeting. And I had been receiving from members of parliament themselves a lot of questions around what are we doing about this matter of perceived corruption in the public service. My own party, the ruling party, had been very vocal in their determination that we will ensure that we deal with corruption wherever it veers its head. And so my job was almost cut out immediately when I came in. This was a clear and present problem that needed my attention. So in the very first meeting that we had, we resolved as a department that we would prioritize this matter and remove any perception of corruption in the public service, and where it does exist, deal with it very decisively. Chairperson, one of the requests that you made to me was to come and brief yourselves as a committee, as we were concerned with oversight over the public service, about the issue of corruption. We indicated to you at that particular time that we had wanted to postpone the issue of coming to brief you because we were still very concerned about exactly how we move forward. So this is essentially a joint concern between myself and yourselves, and we're happy today to report to you that we have made great progress. As we were trying to conceptualize how to deal with the matter of corruption in the public service, I wanted to take you back to the steps that have been taken by government over the years. In 2002, at the General Lekgotla of government, this government had taken a decision in the previous administration that we would find an anti-corruption mechanism to deal with corruption in government departments. And an anti-corruption committee was established, cutting across all sectors of government. By 2007, it became quite clear that unless the Department of Public Service and Administration took the lead, that nothing would be done about this. So we started as a government to try to pay particular attention with giving capacity to public administration to lead this battle against corruption. And various attempts have been put in place, none of which have been successful. However, as you will see in the presentation that will be given to you, when we had gone accompanying the President to Addis Ababa earlier this year, January this year, at the summit of the African heads of state. We have, as you would know, an APRM mechanism, which is a mechanism where heads of state allow themselves to be reviewed by other heads of state. At this particular summit, the head of state of Tanzania, President Kikwete, was indicating that over the years they've discovered that one of the abiding problems that they deal with is the issue of corruption. That it rears its head whichever way they try to deal with it. But they had found at the last instance that they have an answer to the problem, at which point everybody was very keen to hear what it is, the solution that they had found, and they shared with us the solution, and the president was suitably impressed, and we were extremely excited because we thought at just the point at which we were dealing with our own problems, there seemed to be a country that was succeeding with its fight against corruption, and we were very keen to learn from them because indeed the peer review mechanism is for us as African countries to learn best experience from other countries. And this is what we have right now, and you will be given a synopsis of where we are. Essentially, we are migrating that small entity that we had in the public administration, raising it because it did not have the effect that we wanted it to have, it did not have the capacity, it did not have the legal authority that we required. And we're now raising it to a bureau that will have the powers that will be explained to you right now in the presentation. And at the moment, we have a legal instrument in the form of the Public Service Administration Act, and we believe that within the regulations, we are able to amend the regulations to allow us to kick off this particular bureau, and we hope that it should be up and running as soon as it has the acceptance of yourselves primarily and Cabinet. But we are ready to roll, and we think that we've got the answer. If we don't have the answer, then I'm ready to spill my blood. But we've worked at this. It has been a real serious problem, and we have worked at it, and we think that we are at a point where we are ready to report to you, and we are ready to roll out. With your permission, Chairperson, I'll then ask Dr. Mahapa, who is the head of our governance branch in the ministry, in the department, to give you the presentation, and myself, the deputy minister, the acting DG. I did explain the acting DG. He's still part of the Hollywood structures that we have. The DG is still out in at large dealing with the issues of Limpopo. And as I indicated in our budget vote, he is making significant progress, especially in the cutting down on unfunded posts. We've made a significant stride there. He's actually even whittled down the outstanding disciplinary cases that have been a major concern for the portfolio committee. I'll also be assisted by my members behind me, primarily Advocate Simelani, and we are tapping on his knowledge as DG of former DG of Justice around the coordination of these matters. And I'd like to report that we are dealing with other law enforcement agencies in this matter because we don't have a law enforcement capacity and we don't hope to have a law enforcement capacity. We do, however, hope to have a disciplinary process capacity centralizing all disciplinary cases to do with mismanagement of money. But we are going to be assisted, hopefully, in future by the Hawks and the SIU in this regard. Chairperson Dr. Mahapa will take us through the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, Minister, Honourable Members. The Minister has already done the introduction in case of the subject that we need to present. There were two issues that were raised by the Portfolio Committee that we needed to answer. The first one was saying, how is this single anti-corruption agency going to function in case of tackling corruption in a public service, and also some of the multi-agencies within public service. We've got so many agencies that are dealing with the corruption. So how is it going to be coordinated so that we can be able to fight corruption as one agency? The Minister is introducing, in case of the introduction, how the content or the issue of the anti-corruption came into the picture with regard to the Bureau. The Minister also introduced to say, through this APRM, because we call it a peer learning, countries usually present their report in case of their experiences. From their experiences within the continent, we can copy what is the best. So the Tanzanian model was the best one, to an extent that we started to engage them, and where the Minister also gave us a task to be able to benchmark, and so that we understand their agency. And that was done through their embassy. So what we want to talk about now is the establishment of a single anti-corruption agency, as the Minister has elaborated. We say the Bureau is an agency of the Minister of Public Service and Administration, and the Bureau shall be established as a statutory body in terms of Section 45 of the Draft Public Administration Management Bill. As the Minister indicated, the bill is already out in case of the public comment, and then in Section 45, it's where we talk about the Anti-Corruption Bureau. The structure of the Bureau is being determined on the incremental basis, as we indicated that within the public service presently, we are having what we call Public Service Anti-Corruption Unit, which we call it a PSACU. So now from the PSACU, where we want to establish an agency that we know that it will have strength and teeth to be able to fight corruption, we will move from that process. So that, we said, is going to be on the incremental basis. The Bureau will operate as a government component. The model that we are going to determine, it will be a government component where we said it will report directly to the Minister so that the information should not be compromised in case of dealing with the corruption within public service. We are also saying, in terms of Section 46, 47, 48 of the draft Public Administration Bill, the Bureau shall, among other, undertake the following. So these are the functions that the Bureau will be able to do in order to be able to fight corruption. The first one, we said, will investigate corruption-related matters in all three spheres of government, and then also conduct investigation and institution of disciplinary proceedings, and coordinate and conduct disciplinary hearings in respect of corrupt-related matters, including the appointment of the presiding officer and the employer representative. As we talk about on the incremental basis, fortunately, we are moving step by step in case of dealing with the corrupt-related matters. Already we are training the presiding officers that are going to deal with the corrupt-related matters. We've been assisted by Palama in training, and we had a sponsor in case of the CEDA program that was sponsoring us in case of training the presiding officer. Already we have trained 604 presiding officers, and our target was saying we are going to train only 200 per year. So we said each and every quarter we'll have 50 presiding officers that are going to be trained. Already we've got 604 that we have trained so that they can be able to deal with corrupt-related cases. We are also saying we'll provide the specialized technical assistance and advisory support to deal with disciplinary matters in case of the public administration. So the support that we are going to provide, we know that the Minister is empowered to be able to use a directive in case of the disciplinary procedures or disciplinary code within the public service. So now in case of dealing with that matter, we'll be able to advise the other department when dealing with the corrupt-related cases to say this is how we're going to do with corruption in the public service. We'll also say manage, coordinate, and protect information and sources relating to corrupt-related matters in the public service. So that is why we said it's going to be a government component reporting directly to the Minister so that the information should not be compromised, because some of the corrupt-related cases, before we can even finalize, you find the information is compromised and the person is just out on the technical issues. So So now, ultimately, in case of the flow of information, where we know that it's only going to be from the head of anti-corruption unit reporting directly to the minister, not to the department, and also the systems which are not going to be aligned with the department, is going to be better because the information will be well managed. We also talk about the facilitation of the whistleblowers. We are dealing with the NPA in case of the protection of the whistleblowers. Most of the time, you know, the frustration of the whistleblowers, they are afraid to come out. Immediately, when they give us information, you'll find it's them who are compromised. But now, when we facilitate the issue of this anti-corruption bureau, already we'll be able to make sure that the whistleblowers are protected. Already we've got an understanding and also an agreement with the NPA in case of the protection of the whistleblowers. We say we'll build capacity within the institution to conduct the misconduct investigation and disciplinary hearings. As we said, already we have started to build capacity in case of the presiding officers that are trained, so that immediately when we start to deal with anti-corruption as a single agent, we can be able to have a capacity to deal with the corrupt-related cases without having the problem of capacity. We also say facilitate the enforcement of uniform disciplinary sanctions. Previously, as you know, in case of the disciplinary actions, they are decentralized. So you find that the sanctions are not uniform. A person might be involved in corruption, maybe stealing 2 million, the other one in Gauteng stealing 2 million. But when you look at the sanction, other one is suspended, the other one is fired. But since now it's going to be a single agent that is going to deal with the uniform standard in case of dealing with the corrupt-related matters, it means we'll envisage that at least the sanctions should be similar. We also say refer evidence which points to the commission of the corrupt-related misconduct to the relevant executing authority or the head of an institution. As we are saying, this anti-corruption or single anti-corruption unit is going to be headed by an accounting officer that is going to report directly to the minister. And the minister is an executive authority who will have a direct link with the accounting officer, so that such matters, when they are reported, it means it will be between the two. But what we are saying in case of the second question, when we say how are we going to work with the other agencies, we will be able to look at the case, verify the facts, analyze the data. After we get all the information, where we say a person can be disciplined. But when we realize that there are some of the criminal acts within that misconduct on the anti-corruption, we will be able to refer it to other agencies that can be able to deal with. We talk about the SIU, we talk about the Hawks, we talk about any other agencies that have got an enforcement order to be able to deal with such cases. We will also refer evidence discovered through investigation regarding or which points the commission of the criminal offense to the prosecuting authority. Any information that you are going to get which is related to criminal acts will be referred to such agencies, which chair answers the second question to say how are we going to work with them. We will work with the public officials, and then ultimately in case of the involvement of an outside person, but the evidence that we get, we will refer them to those agencies that have got powers to be able to prosecute. We are talking about this agency. We say South Africa has bodies that specialize in combating corruption offenses. These bodies include also anti-corruption task team that was formulated previously. We've got an MPA, and also we've got SIU, we've got SARS, we've got FIG, we've got also DPCI. So those are the agencies that we are going to work in collaboration with in case of fighting corruption. Immediately when we discover some of the facts, we will know which entity we are going to send some of the facts so that they can be able to deal with. If we want to recover money, we know we have to go to SIU, where they'll be able to get a proclamation so that they can deal with the investigation with regard to the corrupt-related matters. We are saying collectively these agencies deal with inter alia criminal, forensic, protection of whistleblowers, fraud and corrupt, and also prosecution. Immediately when we talk about those multi-agencies, it means we'll be able to share our speciality in case of dealing with corrupt. On the public service, we'll deal with the public service officials on the corrupt-related matters. Upon our investigation, if we find that there are criminal offenses that were involved, we'll be able to send such information to other agencies that they can be able to deal with that. We said the Bureau will have a structured relationship with the anti-corruption agencies. We have already started because already we are working with the SIU. Some of the SIU officials have been seconded to Public Service Anti-Corruption Unit. We said it's going to be incremental so that when it starts to function as a bureau, you know already that we've got staff and capacity. Already we've got four SI officials that are working with us within the public service in order to deal with corruption. They are doing investigation in Eastern Cape presently. And we said to the minister, for each quarter we want to report and finalize 10 high-profile cases in Eastern Cape, and then so that we can be able to report to the minister to say, these are the cases, these were given to the agencies, and this was the prosecution. And in case of the public service, these were the disciplinary sanctions that were given to the members who were involved with corrupt-related activities. We are talking about service level agreement, MOUs, and referral system will be the basis of the Bureau in case of the modus operandi. Already with the NPA, we have started in case of the MOU when coming to whistleblowers protection. So now also with the other agencies, we are working collaboratively with them so that we can be able to have powers and strength and also the teeth to be able to fight corruption. Because ultimately when we investigate, the cases that we get, we'll get them from the presidential hotline, we'll get them from the other agencies, and then after that we'll investigate and refer the matters back to the department and assist the department in case of presiding and also initiating the case and also making sure that the disciplinary action takes place. And if there are criminal matters, we'll refer to these agencies that we have mentioned. We say sharing information and access to database will be part of our collaborative working relationship with the agencies that we are going to deal with in case of fighting corruption. Now we are talking about our target in 3 months that were given by the minister to say what is our target in case of finalizing this single anti-corruption agency. The first one we said, the PEM bill, we have indicated that within the PEM bill we have introduced the anti-corruption agency. So, and then also it has already gone through the cabinet, and we know now it's open for public comment since last Friday. And we are also saying, we are also going to follow the parliamentary process in case of making sure that the bill goes through, and then also part of it, which is anti-corruption agency, can be legalized in case of fighting corruption within public service. On the discussion with the various agencies, I did indicate that already we are having discussions and already some of the agencies are assisting us in case of building capacity within this agency, single agents of fighting corruption. We are saying already the SIU has forwarded officials that are assisting us in fighting corruption, and I think we are making a remarkable progress in case of fighting corruption. And in case of the next reporting time, we'll be able to report how far are we in case of the statistics when coming to fighting corruption. We are also coordinating the anti-corruption drive as a department. We are making sure that there are all systems and structures in place to make sure that we fight corruption, also within the provinces. And as we said, in case of the PEM bill, we know that it will stretch until at the local level, where we are also going to use it to fight corruption at the municipal level or the local level. We are saying funded posts and existing budget to be utilized to operationalize the Bureau. Fortunately, within the Public Service Anti-Corruption Unit, we are having a budget presently that we are going to utilize, that we make sure that the agency that we are establishing now, we are going to utilize that amount of money to make sure that it's running. Because we said we are not going to stop. We start where PSACU is, and then on the incremental basis, it's where we are going to finalize the establishment of this. Fortunately, we've got budget, but if there is a need, we'll come back again to the portfolio committee to say we request more funds to be able to fight more corruption, to be assisted by the portfolio committee chair. We will identify the head of the Bureau. We said we are going to look for a high-profile person with experience, skills, expertise, who is going to head this Bureau, so that when this Bureau starts to run, we should not find ourselves wanting. a person who will understand how to put systems in place, structures in place, and also the person who can just run without a delay. That's the person that we are going to identify. We say also the database for the national repository being conceptualized and also built on what we have. We are going to have the data, as we said. What we said, as we discussed previously, we said we are going to have systems like a case management system. That case management system is going to assist us. As you remember previously, the president indicated to say, this issue of having cases for 2 years and officially suspended for 2 years, receiving salary, it's not finalized, it must come to an end. So now how do we make sure that we are going to finalize this corrupt-related cases within 60 days? Is that case management system will be able to assist us. When the case is referred to us, it will give us a date to say, on this date, the case was referred to the bureau. And then when it's referred to a person, on this day it was referred to this person who's investigating the case. And then initially when there is an initiator going to initiate the case, an initiator is the person who's going to assist the department in case of probing. When the disciplinary action takes place, it's the person who should formulate the charge and initiate the case in case of the questioning. The initiator will be able to start the process, and it will indicate how many times has been postponed and then what is the last day. So now that case management system will be able to show. Immediately when 60 days pass, it will show red to say at least you have passed those days, and that is not how we need to manage that. So now that is what we want to indicate in case of trying to manage the day. In conclusion, we are saying government has a zero tolerance stance on corruption. We believe that the establishment of this bureau will help to deter public service employee from committing the acts of corruption. Immediately, if we are very serious in case of fighting corruption, and we make sure that the corrupt-related cases are centralized, and we make sure that in case of the sanctions, there is a uniform standard in case of the sanction. And as the minister has been saying on the media to say, public officials who are found guilty in case of the misconduct when coming to corrupt-related cases, they will be blacklisted. So it will give the public officials an understanding that really, we are not going to tolerate the issue of fighting corruption. That will be able to give an example to say, if you practice corruption within public service, you must understand what are the repercussions. It will result also in clean, efficient public service dedicated to a service of the country. It will also increase a confidence in government and also government's will and ability to deal with corruption in public service. We are also indicating in conclusion to say the PEM Bill has been established for the commence. There are bilateral engagements with interested parties which are underway, and also we say the bill will be tabled in Parliament towards the end of June 2013 as original promise. We rely on the support of this committee. But even though the bill is going to be publicized in June, we are continuing in case of fighting corruption. That is why we said incrementally public service anti-corruption unit is still there. It will graduate until we finalize the issue of the bill, where we will be able to establish a single anti-corruption agency. Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Minister.
Chairperson, we are open to questions, and we will be able then to elaborate on the steps we have taken and what we envisage will be the outcome of this endeavor. Thanks.
Thank you very much for that detailed presentation. I believe members, as you have been looking forward to this matter, you will interact with the presentation at this point. Maybe let me find out, Minister, because I heard during the process of the presentation, part of the issues of the second part had been also entered into. My assumption is that you don't have another presentation, isn't it? You have integrated all. Yeah, that's how I actually captured it. Yeah, I think it's proper. Yeah. Okay, it's proper. We'll see if members still want more information on other areas, like the minister said, and then they can be able to respond in that area, in the presentation. Hence, members, Honourable Du Toit, Honourable Quimby, Honourable Mare, Honourable Boshiku, and lastly, Honourable Msiman. Honourable Ramatlakane will be last in that order. Okay. Let's start, Honourable Quimby.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank the Minister for this single anti-corruption agency. My question is that I want to know the, I hear that there are other members already employed by the department for this anti-corruption. And I want to know, how are we going to employ those people? Are those people employed in terms of the Public Service Commission Act? And therefore, if it's that, how are they going to be independent? How are we going to make sure that those people are independent in terms of they are not going to be the department, let's say the senior members of the department cannot be interfered from their work. And also, how are we, because I think that those people are going to handle some sensitive issues, and how are we going to make sure that in terms of training or screening, are they going to be screened by the department to make sure that they can handle all those issues in a manner that we cannot get that information outside, or they cannot release that sensitive information to other people. And I'm covered by that. How are we going to work with other agencies? Because we know that there are other agencies that are there, but you covered me on that line. And those are the questions that, and the main thing is that the independence of this unit. How are we going to make sure that this unit is independent? There will be no interference at all. Another question is that, is this unit going to deal with the public service only, or they are going to go out in other areas of government? That's my question. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Quimby. Next is Honourable Du Toit.
Thank you, Chairperson. I apologize, Minister, that we're late. If we knew you'd be here personally, we'd take in a chopper. Okay. I just want to know a few things. I don't have a lot of questions at this point, because we didn't have time to study the bill at length, obviously. But I would like to know, how does the Tanzanian Bureau measure its own success, and on what base do they measure it? Because we have to do that ourselves and see if we can reap benefits. Then on the disciplinary process capacity, I take it, as I understand here, that this investigation and this anti-corruption unit will cut across other departments. So I was just wondering how many people we're looking at here, if there's a ballpark figure around this at this point. On the powers and functions of the Rio Bureau, it's number five here. Yeah. This is number five slide. It says that we'll investigate corruption-related matters in all three spheres of government. I was thinking, before we get to the investigation point, will there be a direct reporting line, whistleblower line as well, because there's a few places you can blow the whistle. It's not here, but I was thinking if there would be a direct line to the Bureau as well. And on the next slide, number 6, we talk about the uniform disciplinary sanctions, which is a good idea. I was thinking if we would have, if it's written into the bill already, or are you going to have regulations attached to that, regulating what should be appropriate sanctions. Now, that could be quite a lengthy process, I think. When you say identify the head of the Bureau, the high-profile person, I was just wondering, we might find somebody that's very suitable that hasn't got a high profile yet. You just need to clarify what is meant by high profile, because if we want to lend credibility to the process by somebody that's got a high profile, I understand that, and somebody that's proven himself. But I think you shouldn't be afraid to appoint somebody that hasn't got a public profile. To get the right person is more important than maybe a profile. So just your views on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Du Toit. We are followed by Honourable Bushekwa.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister, for being here with us. My question, the plan will be implemented on an incremental basis. What does this mean? How long is the time that it will take to implement the full plan? And then the other question. What constraints us from implementing the full plan? Will the implementing part of the plan not undermine our long-term objectives? The second question is, the Bureau will operate as a government component. Will this not influence the public perception of lack of independence on this part of the Bureau? I thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Bushekwa. And next we have Honourable Marais.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Minister, thank you very much for the submission. I think the idea and the principle of anti-corruption activities and strategies, we all welcome, and we will all support you in that principle. However, one must just look at a couple of things that I think is very realistic. It has been mentioned a few times now by two colleagues, the independence of this unit. Eventually, it will be based on, the success will be based on often perceptions. If it's perceived not to be independent, if it's perceived not to be objective, if it's perceived to be a super police force within the government or the public service, then you will have a major problem. Then you will not be trusted. So my real big question is, how can we be assured of absolute independence, objectivity, so that we can build a credible unit that can root out corruption? We still have got the situation where the bill hasn't been passed where government employees or their siblings or family members is prohibited from doing business with government. We still don't have a situation where public servants cannot serve in a political party hierarchy. And we know the situation where some public servants are more than often higher in the political hierarchy than members of parliament. To come up with a bureau, establish that, expect credibility and competency, I think it's a major challenge. So we have to address the issues of what can impact on that credibility and that objectivity of this bureau. The second thing is the qualifications required for the inspectors, the prosecutors, the presiding officers. I'm a bit concerned that you mentioned Palama. I think we have all concluded that Palama in its current existence is not really a success, and that's why the School of Government is a new plan of strategy. So I'm a bit concerned that you say that, you know, they are trained and also those presiding officers, is that existing public servants? You know, so in other words, it will be friends investigating in friends. It will be friends presiding over friends, colleagues. You know, that impacts immediately on the independence of the investigation and the unit. Then secondly, you talk about budget, that you have got a budget. You have to be more specific in terms of quantifying the budget. We know that in the past we have said that public service and administration don't have a proper budget, a big enough budget. We have been very glad that the Public Service Commission got a bigger budget, but I think we have pointed it out in this commission, in this committee already in the past, that we don't have a big enough budget. So my concern is, here is a fantastic idea, but how do we see that budget being utilized? I mean, to say that there is a budget that you can use, but it can maybe buy for the coffee and the tea, that doesn't mean that you will have proper investigations and to follow the whole process through until eventually whatever is the outcome. So those, the budgets, the timelines, is very, very important. Then I think it's also, it will be very important, how do we, you know, the specific relationship between this unit, this bureau, and the prosecuting authorities. Maybe that reflects again on the objectivity, because somewhere along the line, some people must decide, listen, no, we're going to investigate this ourselves, or no, we're going to pass it on. So you know, whereas I think if you look at the national prosecuting authorities, there's a clear guideline of what is the criteria for cases that they investigate or that other agencies can investigate or may investigate. And one don't see those clear guidelines. So it looks like a personal interpretation of, you know, which cases do I pass on and which not. So those are, I think, some of the very important issues, because eventually, you know, if we don't start off this unit on the right basis, on the right pillars, it's going to be challenging. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Mare. The next is Honourable Sima.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, and I would also like to echo your words in appreciating that we have a minister who can come to us on a Wednesday. And also from this presentation, there is no doubt that she is serious about her stance on a zero tolerance on corruption. However, I just have two concerns, Chair. The first one is with regard to centralization. This presentation talks to certain disadvantages of a decentralized process. So, if we then consider centralization, and the presentation also informs that this will investigate corruption in all three spheres of government, I just wonder how will this centralized agency spread its wings to all provinces and to all municipalities. And then the second one is with regard to the nature of corruption. The presentation informs us that where there are criminal elements, these will be referred. I am therefore concerned with those that escape from the net. They haven't committed any act which is criminal, but they quickly resign and therefore they are out of the jurisdiction of the agency as such. Then how do we ensure that these do not escape? Those are the two questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Professor Nsima. Last on the list, we've got Honorable Ramatlakane.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and greetings to Minister and Deputy Minister. You forgive me when I've got some echoes in my ears because of the flu I have. So when I repeat myself, you understand that there's some echoes. I don't hear myself properly in my ears. I've got... this question, Minister, firstly, I think we need to say that all the initiatives and efforts that are aimed at rooting out corruption in public service would receive support, because it is, in fact, a cancer that needs to be uprooted, unless, if not, it in fact will eat the entire body of public service. So we will support those initiatives. I just wanted to understand the broken line and the solid line in terms of the reporting. It's a solid line to the minister directly from the bureau to the minister. And where else? Where else is the broken line or another solid line? I'm asking this question because you're talking about the corruption cases, which by and large they have a tendency of compromising. I'm worried about the solid line directly from the bureau to the minister, because the degree of a solid line has a degree of compromising ministers or executing authority, particularly around what constitutes the next step from the point of reporting. Now, I just want to understand what is the wall that is built within this model? Because if there is no wall that is built within this model, I'm afraid there will be a degree of compromise. Maybe not this minister, because she may be working hard, but because of setting up the act to operate in that particular way has a degree of compromise in terms of a crime and reporting it, passing it to a particular authorities that have a particular competency. So maybe if you can break that down, I'm fairly worried about that. The second one is the collection of data. Collection of data in three spheres of government. I think my colleague also posed that question. Given that you're going to have a one unit centralized for the public service, what are the mechanisms that is going to draw data from different spheres of government without necessarily having any capacity of collating and collecting a data and to passing over to appropriate authority at the national level? So what is going to be that model? Who are we going to employ in this bureau, in this bureau? Are we going to employ the ex-police, people who understand what they have to be? Who are we going to employ generally? I know that in the slides there is a question about identifying hidden road running, but certainly there has to be requisite skills and capacity in terms of understanding what is it. So that's why I'm asking, who are we going to employ, and the capacity of the Bureau in general. The strategy to implement in incremental is fine, but in terms of the capacity to be able to address the three spheres of government concurrently, that particular capacity, I just want to understand it. Then the last one, Minister, is in relation to this central uniform disciplinary proceeding and sanctions. It may not necessarily fit like a glove in this question, but it has something to do with this particular issue. We were dealing with the issue of this appropriation last week. In the appropriation, when we had to hear the presentation from communication, we could not, the meeting had to be adjourned because the Director General was not present. And the reason that the Director General was not present was a letter presented by the Director General that she doesn't have powers, or some powers has been reviewed, and therefore she has got no powers to report to the Appropriation Committee. And there is probably a letter and request coming your way. But the troubling fact was the issue of PMFA in terms of the functions and the accounting officers, and the withdrawal of the function of the accounting officers while you are waiting for what may be constituted or may be termed misconduct. So the question was, which of the act empower the executing authority to withdraw the PMFA Act and powers conferred to a Director General, accounting officer, in terms of budget and stuff like that. So I just want to understand, this question is related to this uniform approach in terms of how did, because at the end of the day, the authority resides with the Public Service and Administration, by and large, generally around the issue of the staff and members that are handling in a different way in various departments. So how are we going to try and get that uniform, and what informs that particular aspect? Is it related to this uniform approach that I'm posing? So I have said it may not necessarily directly fit it as a glove in this particular presentation, but certainly has a bit of a concern around the modus operandi. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, honorable members. Maybe what I need to do as well, just to throw some issues that are, most of them had already been touched by the members in terms of what they require clarity and questions that are posed on the presentation done. The first issue, the same as Honorable Quimby, is that one would like to just find out, you know, from those trained presiding officers, 604, just what are the catching features that one would see from them, you know, quite key. What are the catching things on the training program? And one takes it that because we already briefed about the movement of Palama into the new school of government, can that be an can it be affirmed that okay, that curriculum is part of maybe what is going to reside into the new school of government, you know, just for us to have that continuity to see that there is that process, there is a school of government, but activities are linked to one another as one aspect. The second issue is that on the slides you talk again about the facilitation of whistleblowers, you know, and you know, there will be also, when people report, protection of the whistleblowers. I take it this will be one of the most expensive exercises. You know, budgetary-wise, how in this instance, I won't say the Public Safety Administration as a department only. How is government possibly looking into that aspect? Remember that you might have so many people who are blowing the whistles, and then you find that there might be a need for protection of those people. Sometimes you find that that whistle was not real, you know, and so on and so on. How are we going to cap that? Because sometimes people blow things and make it as if it's real, and put all the resources to protect. At the end of the day, you realize that it was neither here nor there, something like that. So I just want to find out how that is going to be coordinated, budgetary and in a collaborated fashion, if there's a thinking around it from the side of the public service. The last issue is that just last week here in this same venue, we had a presentation by National Treasury. We've been interrogating the integrated financial management system. And part of it, we just needed to pull National Treasury as National Treasury to just tell us what is happening. Well, sometimes we do want that collaboration. And part of the things that came before the committee is that the IMF, it's not happening. I think that was one of the disappointments we actually realized. Was all the time, that's why we had so many questions. We realized something was not so right, but we weren't sure what is it. And, you know, it wasn't coming, actually, that there might be, there was Oracle, which did not really perform so well, and there are some bottlenecks, but now we know. And now, I want to relate that with the same aspect of sharing information that Honorable Ramatakan has also hinted to it. Sharing of information and access to the database, how are we then going to deal with it in the light of this new information that we now have of Oracle and its problems, the IFMS not functioning so properly. I just need clarity on those. Thank you. Let me allow then the department to proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair. If you will allow me to farm out the questions in relation to the specialty nature that they might require. I'll start with you, Chair. I will request later that the Deputy Minister deals with the issue of witness protection and whistleblowing. She comes from an environment where she had been dealing with that, so she might shed light on those matters. On the matter of the levels of people that we would like to have on the bureau, I will ask the advisor Menzi Simelane to respond to that. On the issue of where would we get the budget from? I will ask the acting DG. That one is a question from Honorable Murray. He's concerned about the budget and where would we get it from, and he's worried that we will need more than we have now, and the success will depend on an adequate budget. And the issue of you know, the relationship between ourselves, which is asked by Professor Msimang, and criminal cases, who, you know, how will they be referred to, all of those things. The issue that is raised by Honorable Dutoy, where the DDG indicated that we would be targeting higher profile persons, and Honorable Dutoy wants to know what we mean by that. What are these? No, I think you're asking, we are wanting a high profile person to lead this institution. What happens when we have a person who qualifies and has all the attributes who might not be a high profile person? The hunt for a high-profile person comes from my DDG, so I'll ask him to respond to that one. Then, Chairperson, I will proceed to answer these questions. Chairperson, All decent South Africans are worried about corruption. Wherever it raises its head, we're very worried about it. When it raises its head at local government, we're worried about it. When it raises its head at provincial government, we're particularly worried about it. When it raises its head at national government. So our efforts are really based on the hope that we will receive a great deal of goodwill from ordinary South Africans who would want to support us, that we would receive a great deal of support from yourselves. Honorable Ramlagane is concerned about the exposure that any executive authority would have in having a direct line with this matter. We're leaning very heavily on Parliament for the necessary protection that it can provide, because this is a fight that we cannot walk away from. Mm-hmm. And this is a fight that we have taken upon ourselves, and we're very glad that you're supportive of us, because we depend on your support and protection, on protection when things do go wrong, as they can very often go wrong. We are hoping that we will be able to come to you on a regular basis to indicate to you the progress we're making, indicate to you what support we might be requiring, and if we can institutionalize this on a quarterly basis, it would help us with the necessary impetus and also help us to come and seek support. We also have members of the Public Service Commission, and Chair, as you know, they're very, very independent, but we hope that they will be able to assist us when we come across some of these issues, because they've also got same concerns and they are driving towards the same effort. Comrade Chair, Honourable Kunbi is asking, when we talk about independence, exactly what do we mean? And are we only dealing with public servants? Yes, we are dealing with public servants. And at the moment, we are amending a regulation that enables us to set up an anti-corruption unit, whatever it's for. And incrementally, as the PEM bill is approved, we will have the necessary powers that we hope to have to deal with the matters of the provinces as they manifest themselves, and particularly matters of discipline and corruption at the level of local government. At the moment, local government does not have the capacity to deal with cases of corruption. We're not sure about provincial government, but very often they refer their cases, disciplinary cases, to do with misconduct to us. So we are hoping that we will entice them to understand that this is necessary, that they will willingly cede these cases to us without us having to use the heavy hand of any law. But at the moment, we are only dealing with public servants. I think this is as much as we can take. With time, as we indicated, it's incremental. With time, we might perhaps discover that there are other areas that we are wanting to cover. But in terms of the PEM bill, we are hoping that in time, local government will also be part of the sphere that we call public service. Honourable Titoi wants to know, what does the Tanzanian model mean? What has its successes been? Tanzania has been independent since 1961 and has tried everything under the sun to deal with the scourge, because for some reason this is a scourge that latches itself in governments that are in transition, because their structures are relatively weak. So it does attach itself largely to those kinds of societies. And they have been warning us about the methods that do not work. What they have in the Bureau is a multifaceted, empowered entity that allows them to tap into all the information available to the state. So, for instance, they would be able to follow up in the case of a case that is ongoing or a suspicion that is raised, they will be able to tap into all the data that the government has about the lifestyle of a public servant. If Honorable Titoi I find that you bought the deputy minister a Ferrari as part of your overtures to in the marriage pursuit. Then we would want to know where you get the money to. I mean, you're not a public servant, but let us assume you were a DG. It would raise concerns for us how you get that money. But if we are, but if we are linked to all of these things, which we hope that legislation will allow us to be linked to, we'll be linked to eNATIS, which is responsible for the registration of your car. We'll be linked to SARS, which has a far-reaching reach into all of our entities. We'll be reached. We'll be attached. We'll be linked to the financial intelligence networks and all of those networks that would immediately be able to say to us, this public servant cannot have the amount of money that they have. And on our own, we would be able to investigate. We would have the data at our fingertips, and we hope that the law will allow us to have the data at our fingertips. With this, we will be able to conclude, and we will be able ourselves to follow cases, even if they are not reported to us, if they seem a little bit suspicious. The Tanzanian model and the DGG will deal with this, also has a review of the tender processes. All of these come together in their effort to try and understand what is going on. Fortunately, in the issue of the tender processes, the Treasury is itself reviewing the tender processes. We will be able to link up with them in that particular respect. You're asking if it will cut across all organizations. We are hoping eventually it will cut across all spheres of government if Parliament allows us to do that. And the high-profile person will be responded to by the DDG. I don't know why he's looking for a high-profile person, but he is looking for a high-profile person. I believe it is a high-profile person who will have the credibility that we need, who will have the courage and the strength to do what needs to be done, because this is it requires a certain level of status in the particular person to follow through the cases that we would like them to follow through. Honorable Mashiko wants to know why is it on an incremental basis, because at the moment, Honorable Mashiko, we are starting on the basis of what we have. We only have 6 million, which is a drop in the ocean. And this is all that is available to us. But we want to register the intent. And gradually, with the law allowing us, we will be able to move on. And we have been very ably supported by secondment. I think that my advisor will be able to bear me out. Secondment from the SIU and the Hawks. They are overloaded with the cases that they have right now, and they're only too willing to assist us in seconding personnel to us. So on an incremental basis, both in terms of the resources available to us, in terms of the personnel that is available to us, we would like to go incrementally. But incrementally also means that we will target those cases that will send a particular message of no tolerance on this issue. And we are committed to a very clean government. We held an SMS summit, and we indicated to SMS members on the approach that we are wanting to take. We happened at that particular time to have invited a minister from Britain. I can't quite remember why we invited a minister from Britain. And one of the senior managers asked the minister from Britain, how do you deal with corruption in your public service? And he went red for a little while and then went completely blanched, and he says, we don't have corruption in the public service. And we all wanted to hide under our chairs, because, I mean, we would like to be in a situation where we can say we don't have corruption. And it is possible. We would like to be in that spot. Whether it was correct, only history will tell whether they have no corruption in the public service in Britain, but that's exactly what he said. He didn't bat an eyelid, he just went red, because for us it's a huge problem. For them, they're past that. If there's any corruption they're dealing with, it's largely around members of parliament, but not in the public service. So that is why, Honorable Mashiko, we're going on an incremental basis. Lack of independence, my advisor will be able to deal with that. independence of the unit? Yes, the independence of the unit will be the success of this unit. And at the moment, we will be tying this to the minister precisely because that is the only expendable entity we have. We would like to keep the public service as it is, I think that we're doing it because it is the only way that it will actually work. We're not creating a super police force. We're creating a credible vehicle to deal with corruption, because none of us want corruption in the public service. It has the capacity to really erode everything that we have fought for. Honorable Ramatlakane wants to know the solid line might compromise the minister. Yes, unfortunately, any minister in this particular position will have to take that solid line, because it is the only way that we can create the necessary independence that we want out of this institution. Collection of data, what mechanism are we using for the collection of data? In time, when the law allows us, we will link up with the collection of data that already exists, as I have indicated. Who are we going to employ? We already have seconded to us people who have the necessary experience. But we don't want police. We want investigators. We are very thin on the ground with investigators. And that has been the biggest problem that we have. Honorable Murray, how can we create credibility? It is only when we show the country that we are determined to deal with this scourge. It is only when we begin to succeed in the scourge that we will be able to create the necessary credibility. Nothing else. There are no shortcuts. It will take some time, and we are hoping that just sheerly on the basis of our determination and our bona fides as a department, we will be able in time to create the necessary credibility. But a lot depends on the people who will be personing this, which is possibly why we wanted a high-profile person. We are, as I indicated, heavily dependent on Parliament for the credibility that they will lend to this process. The budget is woefully little, and we are hoping that we will be able to persuade the Treasury that we need this. We will not succeed in most of the things that we want to do for as long as we have the possibility of corruption growing within our public service. Honorable Professor Msima wants to know the centralization. It will spread to all provinces. Yes, we will probably start with KwaZulu-Natal. criminal cases, we will refer to the law enforcement entities. We have no capacity for law enforcement, and we don't want it because we cannot cope with those issues. But we will refer that to the criminal processes. Ramatlakane complaining about echoes in Cope. I'm not sure what the echoes were. I will ask one of my supporters to advise on the echoes of Cope. Honorable Ramatlakane then raises an issue which is not very directly related to this, about the DG of communication and the seeming tension between the Public Service Act and the PFMA Act. There isn't any. What the law requires, what we require in the public administration, once a minister is appointed for the effective running of that particular institution, the minister is required to delegate responsibilities, especially those that are outlined by the PFMA, to the head of the institution. In this case, it would be a DG. Honorable Chair, we will come back to deal with the issue of the DG of communications, because it is somewhat tangential, but I know it's a topical issue because it was raised with Parliament. The Minister of Communication has referred the matter to us. I've referred the matter for support to senior counsel. I'm also assisted by the advisor. And it would seem somewhere along the line we would need to revisit our regulations. ministers do not have the power to discipline DGs. DGs are appointed by the president. The power to appoint a DG is delegated to cabinet, but the power to discipline DGs does not fall within the ambit of ministers. I think this is where we would need to go back to and come back to you and say, what do we do with these cases? I suppose democracy is a process of evolution. We learn with every case that we encounter, and if we haven't got answers, we've got to make sure that we find those answers. And that is a particular case that we're dealing with now, and I hope that the media will respect the fact that we're dealing with it and we will not go into this because it further complicates a matter that we're trying to resolve. The chair wants to know what happens to whistleblowers and the protection of whistleblowers here. The deputy minister in her previous life will deal with that with your permission, Honourable Chair. And the IFMS is not working. Yes, we've been concerned about the IFMS. What we did when when the board informed us that they had reached an early agreement with the CEO of CETA is we took that opportunity to look for somebody who would answer all the problems that we have, the credibility problems, the problems with the IFMS. And we targeted the former Accountant General of Treasury because his job right now, after retiring from Treasury, was to deal with the IFMS and make sure that we can make progress with the IFMS. So we asked him to come and become the CEO of CETA so that we can then concentrate on this one big issue that we have outstanding, apart from all the other issues of CETA. And my knees, Chairperson, are grazed from having to beg him to come and work with us. But finally, he did come and agree. He is now the CEO of CETA, and we are hoping he will prioritize this matter so that by the time we come back to report to you, he will be indicating what it is that we're doing on the issue of IMS. Chairperson, I'll ask our whistleblower protector, the Deputy Minister, to indicate how we're going to protect people who blow the whistle.
Chairperson, unfortunately, I won't be able to do what the minister is asking me to do. All I did in my previous life as deputy national head of the Scorpions was refer criminals to the, refer whistleblowers to the witness protection program. Advocate Menzi was responsible in his many responsibilities for the witness protection program. But it is a program that works. And it does require a lot of money, as you had said, Chairperson. To protect whistleblowers is very, very difficult. But I think, again, the most important thing for any investigative capacity that is required, you would need to have the best data analysts possible. You would need to ensure that you create forensic capacity, specifically commercial crimes forensic capacity, and you would still also have to have very good investigators. And the question that you asked about Balama, I don't think Balama on their own will be able to provide these kind of needs that would be required in the long run. But Balama is able to look at some of the preliminary requirements that would be necessary for us to set up a bureau of this nature. But these are very specialized, this is very specialized training. And Balama would then have to either build its own capacity or insource that kind of provision. Thanks.
Before I ask Advisor Menzi to answer some of the other technical questions, I wanted to say that the current Public Service Act does allow us for the creation of a unit, an anti-corruption unit. And this is done by proclamation by the President. We're preparing the proclamation, and by the end of June, with the go-ahead of Cabinet, this anti-corruption unit will be up and going, and we've got seconded staff from the other entities that deal with corruption. We have that seed money that we have, and we would like to make sure that we can hit the ground running with what we have. So July, we are free and available on a Wednesday outside Cabinet to come and report how far we are on that matter. Honourable, Menzi, yes, I don't know why I want to precede the definition of my advisor with Honourable, because he is Honourable. Menzi,
Thank you very much, Minister. I'm worried about the questions that are not being asked as opposed to questions that are being asked about the Puria. May I request...
Let's answer the ones that are asked.
Yeah. I request the members of the of Parliament, the Honourable Members, to please have a look at sections 45, 46, 47 and 48. That is where the detail is provided. With respect to whistleblowers, protection of witnesses to cases is provided by the police. All persons that are threatened in any way as a result of any case, only the police protects them because it's in the course of an investigation of a particular case, criminal or otherwise. The witness protection program protects witnesses to a case being presented in court. It protects those people who have been given dates and times where their evidence will be required. So they are protected so that they are able to reach court to be able to give that evidence. What the Bureau will do in its investigations, and if anybody is threatened, it will refer those people to the police for protection using the criteria that the police use. And if the case goes to court for any reason, that witness is a witness for the state, and the prosecution authority is in charge of that witness, and they will liaise with the police about how that person can be protected to be able to give that evidence in a criminal case. If anybody is giving evidence before a disciplinary hearing that the Bureau will be conducting, the police will be asked to protect that person if there's any threat to that person, because any threat becomes a criminal matter and the police are responsible for that. So the Bureau will simply facilitate the protection of that person through those specific agents. Thank you.
Chairperson, my advisor keeps talking about Bure. It's Bureau. And I thought perhaps for the purposes of recording, we should not be sidetracked. Thank you. I will now ask... No reference to the two members out there. I'll now ask the DDG, please, to conclude on... Before that, the acting DG, where do we hope to get the money before I hand over to the DDG?
No, thank you, Minister. In fact, what we have done, we have costed the structure. It's going to cost us almost 17 million just to fund the structure. As the Minister has indicated, that we do have some funds set aside for PISACU. What we need to do is just to get a top-up fund to fund the whole projects. And what we want to do is to make sure that we get funding for the three-year cycle, because we cannot do it for this current financial year alone. We'll be approaching National Treasury, and of course we'll come to the committee just to get support, because we need that money to fund this project. So we'll be approaching National Treasury to fund it. There was another question that was asked about the sanctions, whether they will be regulated. We have revised the disciplinary code of the public service, and the sanctions are contained there. We'll be taking that matter to the PSCPC to make sure that there is a collective agreement signed by parties just to deal with that issue. Because if it is not in the collective agreement signed by parties, it will be difficult for us to implement that. Already that process is underway. That will be all from me. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Mahapa.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Minister. There was a question that was asked as to whether the employees that are going to be employed within this unit, are they going to be public servants? Are they not going to compromise the information? So the Minister indicated to say this is going to be formed as a government component. We call it a special service delivery vehicle that is going to deal with corrupt-related cases. Even in case of nomenclature or whatever positions, we are not going to use government's position in case of the directors, whatever it might be. It will be a direct unit that reports, as the Honourable Ramatlakane was asking, the solid line or whatever it might be. So according to the Public Service Act, the Minister of Public Service and Administration is allowed to form a government component in order to be able to deal with specific issues that will be able to address service delivery issues that are blockage or whatever it might be. So that one will be able to report directly to the minister. So the solid line will be to the minister. So that is why the information is not going to be compromised. The person who's going to head that component. And then, as we said, also the second question to say, a high-profile person, I was talking about the expertise, the skills, and also knowledge. And what I wanted to emphasize also is it's a vetting of the person. We are going to do a vetting to that person just to look at the security clearance of the people that are going to be part of our anti-corruption unit so that we should not have a problem. So it will be important that as we are saying ourselves, as we have been discussing the advice of the minister to say, we are going to set a strict criteria in case of the selection and the recruitment of the personnel staff that are going to function within that unit so that you get the credible people that are working within that unit. So that is why vetting is very important so that they are able to get the security clearance in case of functioning within such unit. I have explained the high-profile person, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that answers most of the questions we're able to deal with. Thank you.
Minister, Deputy Ministers, we are very, very glad about this interaction. But I think for the sake of this committee, Minister, in due respect, if there are areas that, you know, from the comment of Advocate Menzi, that are not asked and he is worried about, it might be important for us to find out what are the areas that he was referring to. I'm looking at the time, and I think we've got sufficient space to deal with those matters. And if there are matters of those, they're very critical for us, would really want to find out. And I can see that there are hands from members. And Honorable Mohali did also indicate that he does have something that he wants to follow up on. Can I start maybe with Honorable Mohali with the questions before we actually get into this latter part of the matter? Honorable Mohali.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just a small issue from your budget vote, Honorable Minister, where you mentioned something about the corruptor. It seems like in the presentation there was nothing said about the corruptor, and we will always have someone who corrupts the public servants. So then what happens to the corruptor? Thank you.
Honorable Detroit.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't blame the Minister for missing out one small detail of my question about Tanzania, because you actually gave a very nice answer, which was, you know, really helpful. The emphasis on that point was, how do they measure their success? Because, you know, a perfect murder, not that I'm planning one, is that if there's no body and there's no missing person, then you don't know there's a crime. So I was just thinking, how do you measure your success on what, if you've wiped it out, like the British said they did, I don't think so. Just look at all other scandals. But if you get to a point where you think you've achieved it, how can you be absolutely sure? And the lifestyle audit also, people are very. If you have somebody outside the circle that you can really trust, then you can have an offshore bank account. Which is, you know, you can have it. So it's going to be a big challenge to do that lifestyle thing. But I want to point out that if we can measure our success, that's why I asked the question about Tanzania. You have your budget. That's where your budget's coming from. Because if you think there's a 500 million that you can save from corruption, then your 70 million is multiplied 10 times. You see? So there comes your budget. So the question of measuring your success is actually very important. How did they do it? How did they justify their saving? Because it's saving that in the end you say it's costing me money, but without it you're losing so much more. So that is where your answer lies in your budget. So I just would like to know how one can measure it. And then I'm actually quite, I'm not somebody who goes into the background of people, so I was surprised to hear that your deputy minister was involved in the Scorpions. I think she's well placed to take this little matter off your hand. So maybe you could delegate it. I think she's well placed. So after all, maybe that Ferrari is not so expensive.
Okay, Honourable Marais.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe if I can start off by just adding to my colleague, I think what he was mentioning is, did you do a cost-benefit analysis? So in other words, you know, because I mean, with all due respect, with 70 million acting DG, you're going to do nothing. I mean, you know, I can't even see that there can be any success with 70 million rand. I mean, that is nothing to start off a unit. And I think the Deputy Minister said that we're looking for very specialized services, very specialized persons. And I mean, you know, one must also be realistic that if it's highly specialized people and they're not properly paid, they are open for corruption. So in other words, you must put them in a position where they cannot be corrupt. I would think that for the committee, it will be very important that you, at one stage, come and put before us what is your cost-benefit analysis that you've done. Because, I mean, my first impression with 70 million is, I'm afraid you haven't done your homework properly. If I was a teacher, I would send you back and say, you know, go and recalculate your sums. Because I cannot think in the wildest of my dreams that with 70 million rand, you can even start off. So I'm really concerned about that answer, and my impression is that you haven't done your homework properly. And if you haven't done your homework properly now, it can implicate the whole credibility and the viability of this idea. Because I think what we require is not only wonderful ideas, because I think government has got very good policies, but the problem has been implementation and execution. So to come up with another beautiful idea is not what we need. We must come up with something that can work, that can deliver results, and not only ideas. Can I go further to say that you haven't answered my question in terms of the criteria and qualifications for investigators, prosecutors, and presiding officers. I know that it is. I've picked up that, you know, that it will still be done. So I get the impression that we don't know what we need and who we need. So, and I mean, if we don't know what we need and who we need, how will we get someone that can do the job properly? And that again implicates the credibility and the viability and the success of this project. If you don't appoint the right people, you don't know what you need. My goodness, how can you just appoint? And Minister, this is not cheap politics, but this sounds like CADA deployment again. You deploy someone not because of what they know, but because of who they know. And that we have to stop. We must make sure that we appoint people for what they know and what they can deliver, and not who they know, because that will put a question mark behind everything. The last thing that I want to know, Minister, we know that there's a specific role that the Public Service Commission has played so far, and we've always been very complimentary of the role. We have not heard anything about the interaction and the role of the Public Service Commission with this Bureau, and that's a bit of a concern of mine. And then the relationship, because there's a constitutional, current relationship between national, provincial, and local government. The idea that one gets from the presentation is that there's going to be this single super force within the public service. But that hasn't dealt with all the, if I can use the phrase, provisions in the Constitution of Independency, these three spheres of government. Because what we don't need is another special investigation unit on its own within the Public Service Commission, Public Service Administration. We need something really that can deliver the goods. Thank you very much.
Okay, Minister, before you respond, possibly part of one of the things we need to think about is to just propose a snap debate around the issue of deployments, you know, in Parliament, where we can discuss thoroughly about this area of deployment, you know, and also what do we mean. I know that there's been a lot of clarity over and over in terms of cater deployment and so on, but it keeps coming, you know, and sometimes it's misconstrued. But I'm sure if we put it in the form of a snap debate where we can engage, you know, and unpack it, it might sort of relieve the committee, you know, because from the committee side, it does often leak up. But surely a clarity on that, a fair clarity where we engage and debate might be of good help. Let me hand over to you, Minister, on the issues that are asked. So, my Honourable Ramatlakane in the committee wanted to also throw a question.
No, thanks, Honourable Chair. I mean, just to listen to the figures that has been suggested, I mean, the corruption that is regularly reported that takes place generally is counted into billions. So if we put in a unit that is going to stop that kind of public money going that way, should be supported, 70 million to be able to stop this, what is happening in cancer, should really get supported. I'm sure engagement with the Treasury as well would bear fruit. And of course, from where we're sitting, for something like that, we should really support. Now, Minister, just the last question I wanted to ask is this administrative capacity. I understand the solid line, and in terms of the reporting that has been explained, the Bureau administrative capacity in terms of what it receives is going to be ring-fenced outside of the general public service communication, because surely the sensitive staff can find themselves into a various communication if it's not ring-fenced. Is it the idea that it's going to be ring-fenced? So it deals with all matters, and that matters is in that reinforced administrative capacity. Is that what's going to happen? Or is it going to be a general kind of information that can be obtainable easily in the system? Maybe the CETA is it going to play a role in terms of making sure that that happens?
Okay, Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Shall I start with your issue? Yes, we would welcome a snap debate on CADA deployment, because it does keep coming back to haunt us, and we are hoping that we can convince members of Parliament and the country that we are actually going towards a professionalized public service. Wherever it comes from, it must qualify to be in the public service, which is why we are requiring now that every public servant at any level, at every level, will be required to write an exam. So we are hoping that we can put paid to some of these concepts. Then there is a question from Honourable Murray, and he indicates that he's concerned about wonderful ideas that don't take us anywhere. Any great deed in the world has always started with a wonderful idea. We had to start here because all of us are concerned about what is coming out as a great deal of corruption in the public service. I came into office at about the time when the National Development Plan was maturing, at the time when the Public Service Commission was issuing its annual report, at about the time that the Auditor General was issuing his report. And that was terrifying enough for anybody to understand that this needs to be attended to. And the reason why we are sitting with a very limited budget is because by the time I came in, the budget had already been approved for this particular structure. So what we need to do is convince Treasury that the savings we will have in dealing with these cases will be a sufficient value for us to invest in this. But unless we start somewhere, we cannot convince them of that. So we are starting somewhere. We are hoping that at the end of the year we will be able to say, this is how much money we have saved you, and we would like you to invest that money back into us so that we can do a good job of it. So the work has been done. We're just working without the necessary budget, because the budget has already been determined and we're working within those particular constraints. The relationship between the three spheres of government, what we're wanting to do is actually to indicate to the spheres of government that we have an answer to their problem. We're not going to force ourselves on them. And as I indicated, local government does not have the capacity to deal with corruption. We have huge problems of corruption at local government. They don't know what to do with it. We want to say to them, we're here. And we wanted to make sure that through the law, those legal impediments will then be removed so that they can refer those cases to us. But we're not going to impose ourselves. We're not going to take away their constitutional rights. Their rights are enshrined in their ability to appoint people who serve in those particular spheres of government. But if we all agree that this is a matter that concerns all of us, this is a matter where a great deal of money and resources that belong to the public and South African people who pay taxes is wasted, then they will voluntarily submit on this issue that we deal with this. But we're not going to impose ourselves, and the constitutional rights of those spheres are enshrined and respected by the single public corruption agency. The Tanzanian model, you know, we were attracted to it because they vouched that it does work. But of course, you know, for most of us, what does work in other countries is also dependent on the culture of those people. The Tanzanians have, over a time, had a very good educational system that has imbued them with particular responsibilities and particular respect for certain things. And I think that we need to find a way in which, from here, we can go back into imbuing our society with a sense of responsibility. What we're doing now is making it impossible for public servants to open themselves up to corruption. So I am not sure if the successes that they have notched up would measure up to what we have, but we take it on their what they say, and they have succeeded, and we have no way of doubting that. But we are engaging with them on a regular basis. We will be going to Tanzania, my officials will be going there, and they will be able to come back with what is the measurement, what is the rod of measurement there. Then there was a question around there's a question that was raised around corrupta. Now, Honorable Mohale is very concerned about the corrupta. I'm very concerned about the corrupta. At the moment, I'm still dealing with addressing the public servants, I'm dealing with addressing the members of parliament, and I'm dealing with addressing the public. I hope to have engagement with the private sector, because only they, I believe, have the financial muscle to corrupt my people. I had a discussion with the BMF, and I was indicating to them that where I stand, the people who are responsible for the biggest incidents of corruption are the corrupter, and that my public servants are by and large vulnerable because they are in a space that is perhaps open to being corrupted. And I indicated to them, and they didn't seem to find the joke in this, that where I stand is almost like an Adam and Eve story. I believe that Eve was wholly innocent from a woman's perspective, that Adam comes there and uses the example of being lured by Adam into this unholy alliance. But it depends where you stand. And I stand, from where I stand, I think that the biggest problem we have is the corruptor, and we are going to deal with the matter of the corruptor. What we have right now in our law is that we are going to make sure that there are mandatory sentences on all of those people who are found to have corrupted our public servants. And if that is agreed by Parliament, we will have a mandatory law, and we will then not be dealing with anybody who has been involved, either as a director or in any part with a blacklisted company. And if we send this message, and I do know that Judge Yakub has been very vocal on this matter, so we can tap into his knowledge and hope that he will be able to assist us in making sure we can fine-tune the language of the law. But we are getting to the corruptor very soon as we've convinced the corrupted that we need to deal with this matter, we'll get to the corruptor. Thanks. Honorable Dutoy, I think that the Deputy Minister and yourself can sort these problems out between yourselves outside of this. All I did was to make the overtures. It looks like it has worked, and anything else I am certain she'll be able to respond to very directly. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think that the DDG would like to answer the financial budgeting matter.
It's about the Public Service Commission, that how do they come into the picture? Because they are playing an oversight role. So here we're talking about fighting corruption only, but the unit, the way it's going to be established, there will also be preventive measures for the officials not to be involved in corruption. So holistically, it will be like ethics and integrity within it. To say, let's try to build ethics, let's try to do what. So that is where we are engaging with Public Service Commission in case of assisting us with regard to that oversight. As we said also, there is an integrity management framework which will be part of this bureau also, where we talk about the e-disclosure or what, whatever it might be. The minister was talking about lifestyle audit. And so through that electronic reporting is where you are going to track the lifestyle of a person. How many cars does he have, properties, whatever it might be. It's where you start to investigate. So Public Service Commission is part of oversight. They will be working with us in case of also the financial disclosures, whatever it might be. But engagement with them and consultation is always taking place with them. Thank you.
Person, Honorable Dutoy was indicating to us that the lifestyle audit is not a foolproof method. It's just one of the methods we will use, and we're hoping that our public service have not sophisticated the method of siphoning money onto an offshore. Those that we are still dealing with, we will be able to get through. Later on, we would perhaps also perfect and sophisticate our own methods.
The worry from Advocate Mendy, would you still address it about the questions that you didn't ask? Okay. We actually didn't take a time, Minister, to even offer you tea that has been brought outside. It's warm, and then we can break at once, maybe for just grasping a cup of tea as well. But I must say, Minister, for us, from our side as the committee, this was a very fruitful meeting. You know, we believed that we asked all what we wanted to ask. We couldn't ask anything that you didn't want to ask, really. And from our side, you know, Minister, it's one of the agendas that is on our table that would really want to proceed. And I'm glad that there is a start in terms of this. We are very confident in terms of how you responded to issues that we raised, that we will be able to handle this anti-corruption quite appropriately. And we are sure that you'll present it as a quarterly program, you know, Minister, your energy will definitely ensure that everybody has confidence in this government in terms of handling the issues of corruption. We're all worried, like you said, Minister, about corruption, and would need, you know, to collaborate on this one. And I'm sure we can make a success of it. The fact that it's a Wednesday, you are here with your deputy minister, is also a plus for this committee. It shows that despite all the work, you also respect Parliament. We appreciate that very much, Minister. And honourable members, thanks for your contribution, your discussions. It doesn't often happen that we get tea. I forget tea most of the time, because most of the time we get absorbed into what we want to discuss. At this point in time, thanks so much, Minister, and the entire department, and thanks, members. We can break.